Welcome to Dodgers Daily. Casey Porter here. Hey, it was another tough day for the Dodgers. They've lost 7 out of their last 12, but I tell you what, I'm in a really good mood. Of course, baseball's a marathon. You're going to have your ups and downs. We all know that. And the Dodgers are in one of those little kind of down periods right now. It is what it is. It happens in the game of baseball. But I'll tell you what, this is what I have coming down the pike for Dodgers baseball. Tomorrow, okay, guess what I get to do? I get to go to Oklahoma City on a media pass and cover Walker Buehler. I think I'm going to get some interviews. I hope I get some good interviews, maybe with a guy like a Nabil Kreismat, something like that. I've had it set up a couple of times. Finally going to get to make it to Oklahoma City. Thank you so much to Alex Friedman, the play-by-play voice, Lisa Johnson, and everybody else with Oklahoma City that is just so accommodating and so wonderful. So going to get some great up-close footage. I'm going to go live on Twitter, live on Instagram for an inning or two, probably one inning for each. Going to get some close-up pictures. Going to get a good look at his early work and all of his bullpen and all that. So I absolutely cannot wait to watch Walker Buehler tomorrow. Again, hey, not happy that the Dodgers lost again. They lost their third series out of their last four. Not happy about any of that. But again, it's always about, hey, what do you have coming up in the future? I'm an eternal optimist when it comes to baseball. And so, you know, looking at the exciting things that coming down the pike. So tomorrow, Walker Buehler. And then Friday, I want to give a big shout out to Braden Fisher. My beautiful bride and I are going to head up I-35. We're going to pay $3.50 once we get into Kansas to be on the exact same road, which is I-35. And only because you enter Kansas, they decide to make I-35 the Kansas Turnpike for some reason. Anyways, we're going to go up to I-35. We're going to pay her $3.50 for our toll. One way, by the way, we're going to stop at the Kansas Star Casino. We're probably going to lose a whole lot of money. And then because Braden Fisher was kind enough to leave us tickets tomorrow night, going to get a chance to watch one of the most talented teams in the minor leagues in the Bob Uecker seats. So super excited about that in the beautiful new Riverfront Stadium. Had a chance to highlight a little bit the play-by-play voice for the Wichita Wind Surge, Tim Grubbs. He always gives me media passes whenever I ask. Matter of fact, some of the Landon Knack video that you've seen in the past actually came from Wichita. The interviews with John Rooney last year, the interview with Scott Hennessy, Eddie's Leonard, and the Cody Hosey interview that you just saw on the last, I believe, was the launch angle I did on Cody Hosey. That actually came in Wichita, and that was courtesy of the play-by-play voice and media relations director there for the Wichita Wind Surge, Tim Grubbs. So those are my next 2 days filled full of beautiful Dodgers baseball. Hey, guys, the Dodgers are going to figure this out. I ain't worried about it at all. You can't tell me that the Dodgers are going to continue to get shut out. You can't tell me that Freddie Freeman's going to continue to struggle, although he did hit two absolute missiles today that were just tough luck. You can't tell me that this type of situation is going to be consistent, permanent, any of that. The Dodgers are still going to win the NL West. I still think they're easily the favorites to win the World Series. So what we're going to do, I think probably you saw the game with your own eyes. You probably saw everything that happened. You probably have your concerns and also the things that you're encouraged by. Obviously, the most exciting things as of late, today was the third day in a row that the Dodgers had a rookie make their Major League debut. Of course, for Dodgers Daily, that's very, very, very special because we love these rookies. We get to share their grind. Thank you very much to Ricky Benasco. I hope you got on to Dodgers Daily Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, and you read the quote that he gave Dodgers Daily, of which, hey, it basically what it said was, if you didn't, with all the time I put into this and the big grind that I've had trying to get where I'm at, even if this Major League thing is only for 5 minutes, all the time I put into this game was worth it. So Ricky Benasco, super excited about his debut and how good he looked. And then Landon Knack, we're going to get into a little bit of his debut today, some of the things that went well for him, and then also some of the things that we saw that make Landon Knack so good. So 3 days in a row, a rookie has made their major league debut. That's exciting. I think James Outman looks better at the plate. So what we're going to do, instead of just analyzing a game that really doesn't have anything to analyze, I mean, that game's as simple as this. The Washington Nationals, they ambushed a pitcher that was just trying to throw a strike early in the game. They got a lead, and then the Dodgers didn't score. And then, to be honest with you, the Dodgers were a little bit unlucky at the end. They were flat. There's nothing really else to analyze. Sometimes there are games to where it's like when you drive home and you make it safely and you never were in danger and you were totally conscious the whole time that you drove home. But then about 5 minutes after you get home, you're like, I don't remember any of that drive home. That's kind of what today's game was. It was just ho-hum. There was not a whole lot to it. The Dodgers did have a couple of chances, although I felt like because the Nationals got that early lead and they didn't add on to it, usually when you take a really, really, really good offense like the Dodgers have and you don't bury them and you don't create the right amount of separation that you should create, usually that team comes back and beats you. So I kept thinking the Dodgers were going to get a walk and then a home run. The Dodgers were going to hit a double, and then all of a sudden the momentum was going to shift. And it almost did. Freddie Freeman almost shifted that when he hit that hard ball that actually ended up in a double play. That would have flipped the entire script for the game right there. So, hey, there's not a whole lot, to be honest with you, to analyze about today's game. So what we're going to do is we're going to go over what I think are some of the goods and are some of the bads as far as not just today's game, but just where the Dodgers are at right now. So we have a good crowd logging in. BC, good evening. Greg Osterberg, good evening. Chris Faborg, good evening. Chris, I want to apologize in front of everybody the other day. I totally misread what you were saying. I got defensive. I should not have. I've done that a couple of times lately, but anyways, kind of stretched out. I wanted to apologize. You are absolutely a totally 100% completely massively valued part of Dodgers Daily. I always talk about we do this together. We've created a great community of Dodgers where we can have a great conversation about Dodgers. And Chris, you are one of the best, if not the best, at the top. So thank you so much for everything you do. So I wanted to make sure and get to that. Daniel Berry Sports Highlight, good evening. Kenneth All, good evening. Norm Lee, good evening. And so, hey, we're going to have a good conversation. As you can see, Austin is on the road. His family, his uncle has had some health issues. I know he has posted if you want to help those issues, they do have a GoFundMe for him. So he is actually traveling to Detroit. And I told Austin, of course, obviously, I didn't tell Austin, he told me. But, hey, family, you got to take care of family. Get out of here, go do what you got to do. And then, hey, the Dodgers will be here whenever you have time for that. So going to be by myself. Not real excited about that, but I'm not by myself. I'm never by myself because I have you wonderful Dodgers Daily out there to spend this beautiful Wednesday evening. It's Wednesday evening in the big town here in Oklahoma, although it is a somber night because the Dodgers did not win. So we're going to talk about the good, we're going to talk about the bad, and then we're going to take a trip down on the farm, and I'm going to show you highlights of some of the guys that I think have deserved the most amount of highlights in the last couple of days down on the farm, and you and I are going to talk about some of these wonderful young prospects the Dodgers have in their system. Sound like a plan? That's what we're going to do today. So one thing we're not going to do is, hey, we know we're going to talk about the bad, but we're going to talk about it. We're not going to throw anybody into the bus or get overly negative. We're just going to have a good, solid conversation that is productive and fun, and we're going to hash it out and cuss and discuss what we think about the Dodgers and where they're at right now. So let's do this, and I'm going to get to some comments, and we're going to answer some comments before we get to the good, and then we'll answer some comments, and then we will get to the bad. Yes, ABC says Dodgers have lost 3 out of 4 series. That is absolutely a shock to the system. Not going to lie, that is a shock to my system. No doubt about it. BC says, is this an October preview maybe? I don't think so. I do think, I would say BC, I mentioned it on a show or two ago, if this offense becomes boom or bust, maybe, because that makes it very unpredictable as far as when you're scoring. You're going to score a million runs one day, not very many the next, so there's a lot of unpredictability as far as that goes. But I don't think, of course, Freddie Freeman did struggle in the postseason last year, but I don't think the Dodgers not scoring at all is a preview of October, although you do see dudes. And I'll tell you what, the dude that the Nationals had going today, he was really, really, really good. You got to give him a lot of credit, because you're talking about a guy that had spin rate over 2,600 and basically just beat the Dodgers with fastballs. I mean, that's basically what the extent of are you talking about Irvin for the Nationals? I mean, he threw his four-seam fastball. It had spin rate above 2,600. He relied on that. And I think probably the most disappointing part of that is the Dodgers are just such good fastball hitters, and they couldn't hit his. I mean, you're talking about a guy that just lit up the radar gun, the guy that just lit up the Jake Irvin, we're talking about, lit up just all of the track, man. So the spin today reached 26-27 for Irwin. Okay, he threw 43 four-seam fastballs. That's 59% of the time. 59% of the time the Dodgers faced a pitcher today that they couldn't score on that was throwing fastballs. That tells you right there. And by the way, it only had 16 inches of horizontal break, 21 inches of vertical break. That's not insane by any stretch. So that spin was just getting up above the barrels. And so at that point, you know, it just seems like the Dodgers have a good enough roster where they could make some in-game adjustments. If I were to say offensively, what's one of the most frustrating things about the Dodgers' offensive philosophy in the last couple of years? Obviously, I've said the boom and bust. But I think as far as just X's and O's, in-game adjustments. You're talking about a 59% fastball, and we can't figure out how to make an adjustment to score any runs off of it. That definitely is frustrating. I think you would have to say that is in the bad category. Now, hey, it's one thing if you have a guy like Yu Darvish that goes out there with 7 pitches and he only throws each pitch like 13% of the time, and so he's super unpredictable, and then he goes out and executes that day. So, like, he just has a great day, and you're like, okay, well, the guy has 7 pitches and he executed them all. How often is that going to happen throughout a year, right? I mean, it's one thing to say that. It's another to say we saw 60% fastballs and couldn't hit it. That's a little bit disturbing. I can't lie about that. So you got to put that in the definitely disappointing category. And then also Robert Garcia. So he turned the ball over to Robert Garcia. He throws 75% fastballs. And then you turn that over to Hunter Harvey, who throws 85% fastballs today. And then Kyle Finnegan comes in and throws 77% four-seam fastballs. So, I mean, it was all about not being able to hit the fastball, which that absolutely shocks me. I didn't think there would ever even be a scenario where that would happen to the Dodgers, where they could face, what is that, 1, 2, 3, 4 pitchers all throwing basically the same pitch, and they couldn't figure out a way to hit it. But, hey, it is what it is. And hitting the baseball is the hardest thing in sports, no doubt about it. And sometimes you hit the ball, sometimes you don't. So, hey, we have a good crowd logging in. Tell everybody you know to come on over to the chat. Not going to lie about it. The last 2 or 3 chats have not been nearly as full as what we had in the offseason. We need everybody to come back to Dodgers Daily, and we need to get this Wednesday night show rocking and rolling so we can have a heck of a good time together talking Dodgers baseball. Craig Osterberg says that Freeman looks like his swing is off. Yeah, I'm not sure this isn't probably one of the worst slumps for Freddie Freeman in his career. You know, he just has that swing. I talk about all the time, where it's just that gap-to-gap swing where he's going left center to right center. So in his last seven games, he's hitting 160. He has four hits in his last 25 at-bats. And, hey, that's not to throw shade on Freddie Freeman. He's going to be a Hall of Famer. He is one of my favorite offensive players, even before he became a Dodger, just because of the way he sets up. That's not to throw shade on him. That's just to say, to back up what Craig is saying. By the way, Craig brings his A game. Craig mentioned Ohtani pulling it too much. Freeman looks a little bit off, and no doubt about that. Four hits in his last 25 at-bats. And so the good thing about – so a bad could also be a good, right? Meaning a bad would be Freddie Freeman's not hitting the ball right now. Well, that could also be a good because you could say, well, that's not going to last very long. So are we worried about is this a playoff preview? From that aspect, absolutely not. I don't think it's a playoff preview. And again, Freddie Freeman struggled last playoffs, but I don't think you could predict he would do it again. So a bad could turn into a good in the sense that it's bad that he's not hitting the ball right now, but it's good that you know that he will, because he always has, and he's one of the best hitters in the game. So yeah, no doubt about it. Freddie Freeman is a little bit off right now, but again, it's baseball. That happens. Ryan R., good evening, Ryan. Thank you so much for joining Dodgers Dogs. There it is. We got it to 30. Let's get this thing up around 60, 70, maybe even up to around 100, like we had it in the offseason. I know it's a little bit tougher whenever, of course, you're a little more hungry for baseball in the offseason because you're not seeing as much and you're a little bit more excited about it. But, hey, let's get on the horn. Let's get everybody over here. Let's get a good crowd going. Let's get this up around 60. Let's get some good back and forth. Let's get some different opinions. And let's talk Dodgers baseball. Hey, Ryan says, I'd rather have them only winning 90 games in a ring than 110 without it. That's a great point, Ryan. I'm glad you said that, because there are a lot of scenarios to where, and I know Doug McCain hit on this, and I think he was exactly right, where the Dodgers are just trying to figure out what they have as far as their roster goes. They're trying to figure out what they have in terms of depth. And so I think they are losing a couple of battles here and there to win that war, which is what Ryan's talking about, the 110 wins. And like Doug mentioned, to make sure they know by the trade deadline, they know exactly what they need, if anything. So, yeah, you might lose a couple of battles, as Ryan's talking about. You might not win as many regular season games, but you're learning more about your roster, you're learning more about your depth, and you're learning more about your needs as you need to address them as you go on. And as you learn more about that part of it, that does put you in a better position to win a World Series, which is exactly what Ryan's talking about. Great comment, Ryan. That is a really astute observation. Ocean View Coffee Shop, thank you so much for joining. Yes, the Dodgers do have the red-hot Mets rolling into town, of course, an off day tomorrow, and then that will start on Friday. BC, having less regular season wins doesn't make them more likely to have more postseason wins. That is, unless you're losing a few battles to win the war that I was just talking about. If you lose a few games because you're trying to find out about your roster to figure out how you need to shore it up and make it more bulletproof going into the postseason, then yes, I do think there is a scenario to where losing a couple of extra games does actually set you up better for the postseason, because you know more about your team and you know what needs more specifically you need to go and address. So I think you could be right, but I could make a counter argument against that, and that would be what it is. So Norm Lee says the positive side is the bullpen pitched well. There is some goods right there. Okay, the bullpen absolutely did pitch well. Michael Grove, by the way, he pitched really well. He threw five pitches today. Michael Grove had a cutter, sinker, four seam. All were in the zone above 50%. So he was an elite strike thrower today. I don't know if he's actually throwing a sinker or if he was just kind of getting a little bit of right turn to it and the track man was picking up on that and calling it a sinker. But when you're able to throw five pitches over three innings and throw three of them for strikes the way that he did today, that's really good. So, hey, we talk about Michael Grove being that roller coaster. Well, today and the last couple of outings, he's been at the top of that. Now, we know Michael Grove can have outings like he had today. The question for him is going to be, can he string 6, 7, 8, 9 of these in a row and start being a consistent major leaguer, right? That's going to be the key. And, hey, kudos to the organization. They are giving him a lot of run to get comfortable at the major league level. I've documented his story with the Tommy John. Then in 2020, how he's needed time to get back adjusted. The organization has given him that time. Now it's his job to pay the organization back for believing in him, for having his back, and creating consistency out of that bullpen role, and then also the versatility. So we know the top end is there for Michael Grove. We've seen it. So the question is, can he be consistent? Can he be consistent moving forward? Same with Alex Vesia. Hey, he had a good day today. Alex Vesia, ERA on the year, 2.61. 3 scoreless outings in a row. 7 of his last 9 outings have been scoreless, and he's allowed just 2 runs in his last 9.1 innings. Alex Vesia, he was one of the best left, but one of the best relievers in the game from July on all the way through last year. He's had a great start to 2024. So he's a guy that really should be in your trust tree, but for some reason it's hard for Dodgers fans to do that with. So I would totally agree that the bullpen, hey, there was a good. The theme to this, what are the goods? What are the bads? Definitely the bullpen was a good. Landon Knack was a good. Absolutely no doubt about it that Landon Knack was a good. We'll get into that a little bit more. I think James Outman getting a hit was a good. And so from all those perspectives, I think that's good. Kyle Hurts' performance yesterday, no doubt that was a good. Mookie Betts, the way that he's hitting the baseball, no doubt that Mookie Betts is a good. 100% about that. Shohei Ohtani is hitting .423 in the last 7 games. He's hitting .400 in his last 15 games. He's definitely a good there too. So there are some goods to it. Obviously, when you lose 3 out of 4 series and you are the Dodgers and you are this committed, it does not feel like that, but it is a long, long, long season. And not if, when the Dodgers rebound, get this thing figured out and start playing better by June or July, you might remember this series because you'll remember it pissed you off, but it won't be something that you'll look back on and think was catastrophic or anything like that. So, hey, we have a good crowd logging in, and we're up to 34. Let's get this thing up. We're about halfway to where we need to be. Let's get this thing up to 50 or 60, and let's have a good conversation on the – hey, King Yellow Man, thank you so much for joining. I'm on break at work. Can't stick around for long. Well, thank you so much for joining when you could. We certainly appreciate that. Hey, the fact that lineup made Patrick Corbin look semi-decent tells you all you need to know about the current state. Yeah, it struggled offensively. No doubt about that. That is from Norm Lee, Mr. Classic. Yeah, we mentioned that. The bullpen did pitch well. Today's bullpen was the inferior bullpen, but nonetheless was great. Yeah, so when you say that, that is from Mr. Classic. What you're saying is the first wave of bullpen arms is Evan Phillips, Daniel Hudson, Joe Kelly, Ryan Brazier, those guys. Then you have the next wave, which is like Alex Vesia, Michael Grove. And so if your next wave can start performing like it did today, that definitely is a plus. And Mr. Classic says that Michael Grove is improving for sure. I appreciate that comment, and I'm glad that people can at least see some positives from him. I get all the negatives. I get it when it feels like he brings a cask in. I get it, but the guy, there's a reason why the Dodgers have kept him around. They see the potential in him, and they have committed to getting that potential out of him. Hey, another positive, Norm Lee, Andy Páez. He got to make his major league debut, and the first four-seam fastball that he saw, he ambushed and got a base hit to right field. How about that? I did like Andy Páez at bats, except for his final one today, which is the first poor at bat since he was called up. I would agree with that, and Norm, the thing about it is that Andy Páez entered his major league outing and his first call-up with about, I think this year at this time, about a 17% strikeout rate. Now, that, typically speaking, will go up to around 22, 23, maybe 24%. But historically, he's been under 25% with his strikeout rate. He has twice as many fly balls as he does ground balls, typically. and then he pulls the ball above 40%. When you pull the ball and you hit the ball in the air and you don't strike out, that's a guy that should hit a lot of home runs at the major league level. Yeah, Paez is 0 for 6 in his first hit. Yeah, no doubt. Cole says, people relax. Dodgers have 3 more wins than they had at this time last year, 12 and 9 versus 10 and 11. No doubt about that. Very good perspective there, Cole, 100%. I will say this about Andy Paez. I've been saying June or July, and the reason I've been saying that is because he basically came into this year with no AAA experience. So I just worry if he's had enough repetition to feel confident enough to make some of the adjustments. So let me say this. Whenever you make the major leagues, the first thing that happens is you figure out what adjustments you have to make. No matter how good you are, every hitter or every pitcher realizes, hey, these guys in the major leagues are the best in the world. I've got to make some adjustments. So what are those adjustments I have to make? So where I'm worried about Andy Paez is he didn't get any AAA last year. He didn't get the last half of his season. And so what I worry about is when he goes, hey, I need to make adjustment A, B, C, and D, is he going to be able to make those adjustments at the major league level with basically zero AAA experience other than a couple of handfuls of games to start this season? That's my biggest concern about pulling Andy Paez up. My second biggest concern is they start platooning him. They start pinch hitting for him. He starts getting inconsistent at bats. And then the next thing you know, he didn't get any at bats last year in AAA, and now he's going to take a month or so with very inconsistent at bats this year right after he started getting it rolling. So, hey, those are the concerns I have with him. I'm not saying any of that's going to come to fruition. That's just from me seeing Andy Paez many, many, many different times and just seeing the process of how guys go from Rancho to Great Lakes to Tulsa to Oklahoma City and how difficult it is and some of maybe the potential pitfalls of bringing a guy up like Andy Paez if it is too soon. Not saying it is. Personally, it has me worried. It has me a little bit nervous about it, but we'll see how that goes. Hey, we have a good crowd logging in. Again, get on your phone, get on your social media, get everybody over to Dodgers Daily, and let's get a good conversation going. Cole has a great perspective tonight. Grow pitching well, maybe not having the stress of starting has helped him 100%. And also the thing about Grove too is I think the three-inning deal, he probably knew that was going to happen, which relaxes him because he doesn't feel like, hey, he feels like if I give up one run, you know, let's say if I give up one run in my three innings, then that's still, what, a 3 ERA, which is really good. Whereas if you only have one inning or two innings and you give up that same run, then it looks like you had a rough performance. So I think the fact that it wasn't a starting outing, but yet it extended to three innings, which was enough to relax him, I think all that went well. And because of that, he felt like he could attack the strike zone. And I'll tell you what, when you really know that a guy has gotten comfortable and confident, hey, those numbers are spiking. Let's get that up around 60, guys. Let's get everybody over here. Get him in here. Let's get a good conversation. 37 is not enough, guys. Let's get it up there around 60 and let's go. Okay, so like Ryan Pepiot was this guy. Where you really know a guy is getting comfortable and confident and becoming a bona fide major leaguer is when they do what Michael Grove did today. And that is they throw strikes. They challenge hitters. Michael Grove, again, three different pitches that were north of 50% in the strike zone. When they throw strikes and then still get outs, that's when you know they're becoming a bona fide major leaguer. So that is the most exciting part of what happened with Michael Grove today. Again, we'll see if it can stay consistent because that tells you he had enough confidence in his stuff to say, hey, I'm going to throw this in here and I may give up a run, I might not, but my stuff is good enough to be in the strike zone to get outs versus trying to nibble around the edges, play the peripheries. Next thing you know, you're down on the count and you're getting ambushed. So I thought that was a very good deal for him. Yeah, hey, Neil Casamoto, thank you so much. Neil says, smash that like button. Hey, I like the way you're thinking. Hey, we're getting up to 39. We're 21 short of my goal. I want to get this thing up to 60. I know the Dodgers have been struggling, but I am in an upbeat mood. I am never going to apologize for viewing baseball through a super positive lens. You can talk to Dodgers people up and down this system. One phrase you will hear is negative thinkers don't make it. I just can't think negatively. Plus, again, get to go see Walker Buehler in Oklahoma City tomorrow on a media pass. Get to go see my beloved Tulsa Drillers on Friday, thanks to Braden Fisher, who got my wife, my beautiful bride, and I tickets to the game on Friday. Get to go to the farm on Saturday and hang out with my beautiful son all day long on Saturday. So, hey, although the Dodgers have won or have lost three out of the last four series, life is good. And like Cole said, the Dodgers are in better shape this year than they were last year. And I think we would all have to agree they're not playing as good as we want them to. And I would bet if I took a poll right now, do you think the Dodgers are going to win the NL West? I would venture to say almost everybody in this chat right now would say yes, I think they will. So all is good. We're not going to sugarcoat things. There are things that are bad. We're going to cover the good and the bad. So, hey, I like to stay in an upbeat mood. I like to focus on the positives, like to fix the negatives by focusing on the positives, and that's what we're going to do here. Hey, I am Hero. Thank you so much for joining. First year following the Dodgers, and I keep reading they are slow starters. I wouldn't say they're slow starters. I mean, I think they started out with the Padres, which is a bad matchup for them. Then they had the Padres again, which is a bad matchup for them. They started slow last year, but I think if you were to say, yes, they are slow starters, this is a great question that is heavily, heavily layered. I am Hero. I would say that you could say they're slow starters because the front office likes to do exactly what they're doing right now, and that is, hey, we're up to 37. We are 20 away. We're getting there. We're climbing. Get everybody over there. We need 20 more, guys. Hey, and by the way, we only have 15 likes. We need to get this thing up to 60, 70, 80 likes. We need to get this up past 50 people on this show. 60 is what I want. That's my goal every time. We're about 20 away from that. Let's get that going. So if you were to say the Dodgers are slow starters, it would be because the front office is constantly messing with the roster. I mean, look at Denelson Lamet. Look at by the way, we're going to talk about a great start again today for Nabil Chrismont, sending Kyle Hurt back down. All the transactions, that creates chaos, and that can create a slow start. But I think you're losing battles, as I said earlier, to win the later war, because what you're doing is you're finding out exactly what you have in terms of depth, and then also what holes you have. So even if you are a slow starter from that aspect, I don't think that's a bad thing. I think overall that is a good thing, because I think that shows maturity and patience and overall intelligence of the front office to be willing to find out from a long-run perspective exactly what they have with this roster. So Craig says, how far away is Hayward from playing? I have no information on that, honestly. I don't have, most of the information I get is off the record, but I don't even have any off-the-record information on Jason Hayward. So sorry about that, Craig, but I just don't have anything for you. Hey, Daryl Jackson says there are still holes on this team. No doubt about it. Whenever you put together a roster full of pitchers that are injury prone, and then guys that strike out a lot, like Max Muncy, Teo Hernandez, and then you have a guy coming off of an ACL like a Gavin Lux. You know, hey, we talked about it. The left side of your infield, is that really what you want it to be back when it was Gavin Lux? So, Daryl, you are 100% correct. There are absolutely 100% still holes in this team. Can't disagree with you whatsoever. So, Nando390, thank you so much for joining. What's wrong with Chris Taylor? If you go back to anything on my webpage and you just search Chris Taylor, I have written about this and written about this and written about this. So Chris Taylor, he swings with a negative bat angle, which means the barrel is below his hands, and then he also lifts his hands, which means that his barrel's not ever matching the plane of the pitch that's coming in, which means if your barrel's not matching the plane of the pitch coming in, think of it like an airplane. Okay, so like if you're matching the plane, and look how long of this window you have to hit, right? But if you're not matching the plane, if you're going up and the pitch is coming like this, okay, so unless your timing is perfect, you're not going to hit the ball. That's Chris Taylor. So why I always say that Chris Taylor needs to think up the middle, because if he's early, he's right here, and he's either going to swing and miss or roll over and hit that rollover ground ball that we've seen him do 1,000 different times. So, hey, you're not going to change the mechanics of Chris Taylor's swing at this point. He's always going to swing up the ball. He's always going to swing with a negative bat angle. So what you can change, the adjustment you can change, is the timing. Chris Taylor, he's strong enough to do it. He has to let the ball get deep, because the thing about it is the further back in his swing, the less he has actually swung up, right? So the more his swing goes, the more he swings up at it. So the further back, the less he swung up at it, which means the more you're actually matching that plane with the pitch. So in my opinion, Chris Taylor, the longer he lets the ball travel, the more consistent contact he's going to make. That's the adjustment, in my opinion, that he's always had to make whenever he struggled. That's the one I think he needs to make right now. But, hey, the Dodgers, hey, we're up to 41. We're 19 away. Get on the social media. Get 45 right there. Looky there. That's fantastic. We're climbing, guys. We're getting there. We're having a great conversation. We're going to talk about the good and the bad. So the Dodgers have what people way smarter than I am dealing with Chris Taylor. But I'm telling you, I've seen him all the way back to his days at Virginia. I saw him, you saw with the Jack Murphy conversation. I saw him all of his time in Oklahoma City. And that's just what I see with this swing. So, hey, that is an absolute great question. And yeah, Chris Taylor is a guy that the Dodgers love. Hey, I will say this, and I'm not saying this is 47 right there, we're growing. I'm not saying this is the case, but Chris Taylor's a great story, guys. Chris Taylor is a great story. Okay, the Dodgers got him off the scrap heap. They brought him to Oklahoma City. He played 17 different positions, and he hit, and he became a World Series champion. I mean, his story is a story of success, one that all Dodgers fans should be happy with, excited about, proud of. But with everything, it always comes to an end. Like Jack Murphy said, either Father Time gets you, or you never really were that good to begin with, and the talent gets you. So everything has to come to an end at some point. The Dodgers have to figure out what that time is with Chris Taylor. There will be a time to where if this continues, they got to cut bait, they got to put team first, and they have to fix this. Say, hey, it's been wonderful. We love you, brother. You're always a Dodger. We'll figure out how to keep you around the system. We'll figure out this or that. And we're going to move on in this direction. I'm not saying that's right now. I couldn't tell you what that time window is. I think it's going to be later rather than sooner, because when you get in the Dodgers trust tree, when you've hit the walk-off home run in a playoff scenario like Kike Hernandez has done, when you enter this front office's trust tree, you get lots and lots of run. They have your back. So they're going to have Chris Taylor's back for as long as they possibly can. And, hey, it's probably going to be frustrating for light. We're almost to 50. We're 10 away from my goal today, which would be 60. The likes are going up, so let's get a great crowd going in. Let's talk as long as we want. Let's hash out everything, all of our frustrations. Let's get it out so we can move on and get ready for the off day. Great day, Garrett. Great time for an off day. But yeah, I think it's going to be frustrating for Dodgers fans, because that trust tree is there for Chris Taylor. It's going to be later rather than sooner. Norm Lee says, so many arms going down. Strider being the latest makes you cross your fingers on Sheehan and Miller and Gratterall. Yep, it does. And it's very simple what's happening. I know a lot's being made out of it. But when you ask people to max out, what hurts arms the most, regardless of what pitch it is whenever somebody maxes out on how hard they throw it. When you ask an arm to max, we're up to 50 right there. 10 away, guys. We're almost there. Let's get to our goal. When you ask somebody to max out, you know, it's like if you take an engine and you rev it up to 3,500 RPMs, and you do that the entire time you're driving, right? Well, yeah, you're going to drive really fast, okay? But you're also going to be at the mechanic shop a lot. That's what's being asked of pitchers nowadays, and especially whenever you're throwing breaking stuff. Of course, breaking stuff's always harder on an arm than a fastball, but their guys are maxing out on all of it. The guys like Ryan Yarbrough, it'd be interesting to see if the crafty guys are still getting injured like the power guys are. That's what you need to look at right there. So it's the fact that everybody's maxing out. No doubt the injuries are very concerning. And then again, also guys are going fewer and throwing less. And so I think they're so it's like the difference between like football and basketball shape. This is always for high school kids that play three sports. This is always an interesting transition. Like, you're definitely in shape when you play football, but you're not in basketball shape. Whenever you play football, you're in shape to max out for like 5, 6, 7 seconds at a time. Max effort, right? I'm going to kick this guy's ass in front of me for 5 seconds. Then I'm going to rest for 10, 15, 20 seconds, and then I'm going to do it again. Whereas basketball, you're never really maxed out like that 5 second period is in football. But you never get a break. So it's like nonstop, 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 right? So it's one of those deals to where whenever, you know, maxing out versus the endurance part of it, guys aren't asked to endure, they're asked to max out. And because of that, I think that is the reason for all of the injuries. Hey, Roy Estrada, thank you so much for joining. We're up to 54. We are six away, guys. We are six away. Call your grandma, call your dad, call your aunt, call your uncle. Get them over here. Let's get to 60. That will make me happy tonight. Whether that matters or not, I don't know. But I would love to see that 6-0. That's always my goal for our viewers on Dodgers Daily. Roy Estrada, who always brings his A game to Dodgers Dogs as part of the Dodgers Daily Network. By the way, hit that like button. If you haven't done so, turn on your notifications. So whenever I do decide to go live, situations like this, you'll know about it. Don't feel disrespected or disappointed at all. Knack minus first inning, pitched well. Freddie will figure it out. We are not playing our best baseball and still in first place. A-plus, Roy. That is A-plus material right there. That stuff you get right there on Dodgers Daily, on Dodgers Dogs as part of the Dodgers Daily Network. Cole says, I will take Ohtani $700 million for his work. Ethic alone, the dude lives and breathes baseball. No doubt about that. Great point. Hey, Goat Yachty, thank you so much for joining. We're hurting, my friend. Yeah, I hear you there. Gary A., that looks like a Georgetown G. I'd be curious to see if I was right on that. CT3 can do no wrong in my book. We all love Chris Taylor. He's been a marvelous success story for the Dodgers, no doubt about that. Roy Estrada, relax, Dodgers fans. It's really early, and we will peak at the right time. When we have the right guys in lineup, we'll destroy teams. Our pitching woes will be addressed. I can't disagree with you at all. Roy Estrada is bringing the perspective tonight, man. Attaboy, Roy. Keep it up, man. A-game stuff right there. BC says they can have the best pitching in baseball. If their offense in October continues its trajectory the last few seasons, they'll lose every one of them 2-1. Or negative 10. Yeah, we'll see. But, yeah, I mean, this is an offense that I think is going to be quite a bit more consistent in the past. I mean, you added Shohei Ohtani to a lineup that scored a lot of runs last year. But, yeah, we'll see. Okay, so Norm Lee says, Lux looks like Vargas did in spring training. They look defeated stepping into the box. I can't disagree with that, Norm. He does look defeated. He needs to regain his swing in the minors, not in the big leagues. Recall him when he's reset. I don't have a problem with that. Plus, I'd get to see Gavin Lux play. I'd probably get to interview him, which would be cool. But bottom line is, I want what's best for the team. Then I want what's best for Gavin Lux. Honestly, I wouldn't have a problem with either one of those. Best case scenario is he bangs a couple right on the button, and then all of a sudden he feels good about it. But I don't think that's an unfair take there, Norm. Not at all. Neil Casamoto, CT3 should get his eyes checked. Seriously, there are players that struggle because their eyes sight has problems. Yeah, we've had that in the past. Matter of fact, we had that exact scenario happen. Hey, my gut feeling, yeah, that's Roy talking about the Lakers. Hey, Norm Lee says, arguably, Yarbrough has been the team's most consistent pitcher so far. Can't disagree with that. Goat Yachty, hey guys, give the stream a like. I'm so happy I found this channel. Well, Goat Yachty, we are so happy that you found us. Yes, 8-18 say we did have a worse record this time last year. CT3 is under duress. It's mental, no doubt about it. He couldn't even run the bases. So we are at 52 right now. So the goods that I had, or the goods I had were Kyle Hurt and his two innings yesterday. His fastball was in zone 65% of the time. Mookie Betts hitting 364, and he's been remarkably consistent. Shohei Ohtani, 423 in the last seven, 400 in the last 15. Landon Knack was good. Okay, so here's what happened to Landon Knack, in my opinion, today, and I've seen Landon Knack a lot, so take this for what it's worth. He didn't throw his first fastball for a strike, so the next fastball he threw to the first hitter of the game was center cut because he was just trying to get that first major league strike in there. Don't you know that hitter absolutely knew that was coming? I mean, you knew that. You knew C.J. Abrams was going, okay, well, this is a rookie that threw ball one, right? Okay, and so at this point, he is going to center cut a fastball for me, and when he does that, I'm ambushing that. And that's exactly what happened with C.J. Abrams. And then Jesse Winker in that series, he got a fastball. And then at that point, here's another thing that you know about Landon Knack, if you followed him at all. The second best pitch is going to be the changeup. So once Landon Knack landed that fastball for strike one against Winker, I promise you, he knew the changeup was coming. Landon Knack threw two really nice changeups to the outer quadrant, to the lower half of the zone. But because Winker knew that that is his best secondary pitch, I promise you Winker was sitting on the changeup. He ambushed it, and he got a base hit. As far as Luis Garcia Jr., okay, so this is what Landon Knack is really good at, right? So we saw the four-seam fastball. We've seen the changeup. And so both of those have been hit. So guess what he turns to? He turns to his curveball. But here's the problem. Nerves, no doubt about it. Landon Knack was definitely nervous. Did not land either one of his two curveballs to Garcia. So trying to pitch backwards, trying to show a different pitch already. Already shown the fastball, already shown the changeup. Now he's showing the curveball. Didn't land either one of them. Now he's down 2-0 in the count. Guess what he has to serve up? A four-seam fastball that is going to get hit. He only throws about 92-93 at this point. So when he gets behind the count to major league hitters, he's going to get ambushed like that. Okay, so he gives up the runs, the two runs in the first inning, because he's nervous. Okay, his first fastball of the game doesn't land, has to center cut a fastball. Two curveballs to the third hitter that got the third hit of the game. The two curveballs didn't land. And then the second hit, the changeup, Winkler knew the changeup was coming. That's pretty typical. You could almost guarantee that was going to happen. It was just a matter of whether the Nationals were going to execute, which they did. But then Landon Knack turned into Landon Knack. Check this out, okay? To the first hitter of the second inning, four-seam curveball slider. Three different pitches to the first hitter of the second inning, fly out. Second out of the inning, four-seam changeup. So within the first five pitches of the second inning, Landon Knack had thrown all four of his pitches. Fastball, slider, change, curve, and landed all of them for a strike. And I'll be darned if he doesn't get a strikeout. And then to the third hitter, he throws a changeup, four-seam, curveball, changeup. So he showed all four pitches within the first five pitches of the inning, all for strikes. Then he showed three of the four to the last hitter and threw them all for strikes. That is Landon Knack. That's the pitchability that we've talked about with him that he has. That's the major league part of him. That's how he gets outs at the major league level. That second inning was big time. It was vintage Landon Knack, and it was just simply awesome. Okay, hey, let's get back to our wonderful lobby. We are getting close to the goal here, which is 60. Okay, and David M., thank you so much for joining. Cole, would sending Lux and Taylor down help to regain their confidence? You can't send Chris Taylor down because he does not have options. You would have to DFA him to remove him from the 40-man roster. He would then have to clear the waiver wire. Then he would have to accept a minor league assignment, of which I don't think he would. So sending Taylor down, not an option. Sending Lux is. I'm not against it. I'm getting to that point. I'm a Lux defender. You know that. But at some point, it becomes what's best for him. Would sending him down, it's called a reset. It's not an insight. Coach Holt mentioned this. When you get sent down, we're two away. When you get sent down, you can do one or two things. You can act like a baby and pout and feel pissed and want to blame everybody and be mad about it. Or you can pull your bootstraps up and go to work and get yourself back. What they call it is the term you'll hear it in a triple A dugout, reset. Do you need a reset? You're going back down to AAA to get a reset. So, yeah, maybe Gavin Lux does need a reset. We'll see what happens there. They are trying to give him enough run. What they're hoping is he runs into a couple of balls, starts feeling good about himself, and now he's back to being a good offensive player. Yeah, Mr. Classic says Knack was on cruise control from the second through the fifth inning. Got 10 hitters out in a row at 1.818. Say says, I really wish Freddie was still in the two hole. Smith 3 and Showdog 4, T.O. 5, Muncy 6. I don't like Muncy and T.O. back to back. Too many strikeouts back to back for me. I would have Will Smith in between those two, but that's just me. Hey, Mr. Classic, it's Vanasco, and he has to show more than one or two games. Yeah, no doubt. Vanasco definitely does that. He has been really, really good. He was probably the best reliever in the minor leagues at the end of last year. Those are my Dodgers dogs right there. Obviously, they're not very happy about the Dodgers losing today either. But, hey, Matty Man 5, thank you so much for joining Vessie, a better classic. Hey, Mr. Classic, Vessie was still dangerous today. Luckily, he got out of the jam. Totally agree. He is a roller coaster. He doesn't make you feel comfortable. Bottom line is, though, he actually has been very good. Again, Alex Vessie, here's the bottom line for him. ERA's 2.61, three scoreless outings in a row. Scoreless in seven of his last nine. He's allowed just two runs in his last 9.1 innings. Although, agreed, it's a roller coaster. It's never comfortable. You're never like, oh, he's got control of this, right? You never feel like he has total control. Dodgers are getting everyone's A game, no doubt. Good point there, Cole. Getting everyone's A game, four away from 60, by the way. When you play the best, you want to beat the best. How could Taylor reject that? Well, if they DFA him, so when a guy gets DFA'd, they go through waivers. If they clear waivers, then at the end of that, if you've been DFA'd before, or if you have a certain amount of service time, you then get reassigned to a minor league assignment. And then if you've ever been DFA'd before, or if you have enough service time, you don't have to accept that assignment. You can actually reject that assignment and choose free agency instead. I think that's probably what Chris Taylor would do, and that's how he would reject that assignment. Hey, Tim Otley says, Lux responded well last time. We sent him down for a mental. There's that word. You can tell Tim Otley is an intelligent, high-level baseball person using that word, reset. It absolutely is a reset. Hey, let's take a trip down on the farm. Let's go ahead and throw some of what's happened down the farm. Let's start with some of the guys that are closest to the major leagues. And the guy that I want to talk about at the AAA level, this isn't going to be a super extensive farm show today, but I want to talk about Nabil Chrismont, okay? This is him right here. You might actually get some audio in there. Let me turn that off, and then let me click this over and then get into the videos here. Okay, here we go. Let me back this up. Nabil Chrismont right here. This is him, highly skilled. He moves the ball. This is a guy right now that is absolutely the way that he is performing. Look at that. I mean, he's just constantly doing that right there. Nothing special, nothing great, but he's moving the ball, and he's moving the ball while staying in the zone. Now, understood, it's at the AAA level, but he did have, look, see how he moved the ball left? Now he's moving the ball right. He's keeping the ball down the zone. He's locating, look at that ball down the zone again. He's locating well. He's moving the ball. He's keeping it in the strike zone. And see how that ball started off the outer half? Let me back that up and kind of show you why this is successful here. I'm going to show you where this ball starts and then where it ends up, right there. See where this ball starts off of the plate? Now look where it ends up. Boom. See how that hop back over the plate? That right turn to that sinker. Also his changeup. Nabil Chrismont is a guy that I think is real close. Needs look and see that one turns left a little bit. He is throwing really well. This is his second outing in a row going back to last Friday. That has been simply fantastic. So I think he is a guy that really, if you're a Dodgers fan at this point, you need to keep a really, really, really close eye on him, because I think that he's having a whole lot of success. So I wanted to start the Down on the Farm segment with Nabil Chrismont, kind of show you a little bit of that. Before we dive into some of the other younger guys that aren't as close to the major leagues, so let's hop all the way down to single A Rancho Cucamonga. And this is more process. This is more total prospect. But I wanted to show you a guy that you need to be really, really, really excited about. And that is because he has been pitching really, really, really well. So right here, this is, let me cut this over. Let me back that up. This is, Edgardo Enriquez, excuse me, I'm having a brain cramp right here. I'm trying to do about 8 different things at once. Let me get that off there. Edgardo Enriquez right here. By the way, this guy that you're seeing, this fastball you're seeing here, that's a slider there. That's big time. 100 miles an hour. Second pitch of the day for Edgardo Enriquez today. Hit 100 miles an hour. So wanted to show you his great stuff. You saw him in the spring breakout game. You saw how impressively he came back and really splat that pitch right there. That's 100 miles an hour. 100 you just saw, and then up in the zone. This is the guy in Edgardo Enriquez that you need to put in your Rolodex and remember the name, because he is really, really, really fantastic. And let me get to another guy that has been absolutely lights out. I want to talk about Robo, Justin Robleski. If this is a little clunky, I apologize, but I am by myself doing my best here. Here's Robo right here. This guy hit 98. Okay, and he throws 6 pitches, by the way. That 4-seam up in the zone. He throws the back foot slider, the back door slider. He throws a changeup. He throws a curveball. You name it. And he basically, look at that fastball. See how he's commanding the top of the zone. He's commanding the inner part of the zone. There's the get-me-over curveball. Then you're going to see the back door slider. There's the fastball that really, I mean, that just, he's just challenging a hitter, and that's just too much for the hitter. That's 98 miles an hour. From Justin Robleski that you just saw. So this is a guy right here that is really, really, really getting major league ready by the performance. Super, super excited about Justin Robleski and everything that he's doing right now. And then another guy that you know very well that I wanted to talk about is Dalton Rushing. And the reason why I wanted to talk about him, let me get to the right here. Okay, Tim Grubbs, the play-by-play guy for Wichita, this ball was not carrying at all to right field last night, by the way. And Tim Grubbs on the broadcast, who is just does a wonderful job for the Wichita Wind Search, just basically went on and on about, I can't believe what I saw as far as the carry of that ball. I mean, that ball, he just kept saying, that ball just kept carrying and carrying and carrying. And he was like, wow, that's incredible. That just goes to show there's that good swing right there. Let's go ahead and break that down from Dalton Rushing. Let me slow that down so we can get into a really good look at Dalton Rushing swing and break that down. Here you see how he loads on the backside. He's probably about 70-30 to the backside. Going to put the foot down, and when he does, see how he has right there. Let me back that up just a little bit. See that stretch? Got that knob pointed right at the catcher. That's called walking your hands away from your body, and that's going to let him just think of it as a rubber band that's going to allow him to just release that rubber band. And when he does, he's creating what's called torque. So there you go. You see right here, this path right here. This is why I love Dalton Rushing swing. You're going to see on the backside, you're going to see it's going to get in the hitting zone right here. It's going to stay in the hitting zone from here to there. And then at the front of the zone, now it's going to come up. Watch this barrel from this point on go up. Watch this. See that? See how that barrel went up from there? So you have a lot of consistency. Let me back that up. Consistency in the back. Watch the consistency in the back here as we slow this down. Consistency in the back, power in the front. That is Dalton Rushing there. So I wanted to cover those three guys. Those are guys that I was super excited about from last night. So, hey, let's get into conversation about them. If there is a prospect that you would like to see specifically and talk about, just let me know, and we can get after it and talk about anybody you want. It's 8 o'clock here in Oklahoma. It's 6 o'clock on the West Coast. Hey, yeah, Mr. Classic, we do have a runner and scoring position problem. That is a blessing and a curse. That means you're getting a lot of runners on, but it means you're not driving them in. Dodgers were 0 for 10 today with runners on base. I believe they were 0 for 7. Don't give me the – that's – I think I'm correct on that, but don't hold me to the exact number. But I think it was 0 for 7 with runners in scoring position. So you are 100% correct, Cole. Hey, 60. We're two away from 60. I want to see that big 6-0, baby. And we're at 33 likes. Let's get it going. Hey, Cole says, I don't see any beneficial trades at this time. It would cost too much. Yeah, they're going to continue to monitor. They're going to continue to find, a couple of other guys that I wanted to talk about before we move on. That jogs my memory as we're kind of bouncing around between our coverage here of the Dodgers and then also down on the farm. Here is a guy that I wanted to make sure that you know all about that is in the system because he is left-handed and he is a reliever and he has had major league success that has been basically sidelined by only injury. And so when he hasn't been injured, he's had major league success and he is in the system and he is it with AAA Oklahoma City and he threw today. That is this guy, Drew Pomeranz. Drew Pomeranz is a guy that is knocking on the door, kind of takes the replacement of that Justin Wilson type guy, the lefty in AAA with major league experience that you think might play a role for this team. So Drew Pomeranz, keep checking in on Dodgers Daily every day for updates on Drew Pomeranz because I just can't see any scenario that a guy like this that has major league success in his past that the Dodgers won't at some point. I know they're considering bringing him up, but I just think at some point the way that this club loves to use their roster and changes on it and all of that, I just can't see any scenario that a guy like Drew Pomeranz, who has a 3.91 ERA, by the way, in 858.1 major league innings, the guy you're seeing on the screen right here that is in AAA Oklahoma City has 858.1 major league innings and has a 3.91 ERA. Now, the last time he pitched any significant amount was with San Diego in 2021. But in 2021, just 3 years ago, he had a 1.75 ERA. In 2020, the shortened season, he had a 1.45 ERA. So this is a guy, Drew Pomeranz, that can get major league outs. He's healthy, and he is with AAA Oklahoma City right now. So definitely keep your eye on him. And then another guy that threw today for AAA Oklahoma City that I want you to pay attention to, this is Jesse Hahn. Jesse Hahn looked really good for Oklahoma City today. Alex Friedman had a really nice, you can see that two-seam right there for Hahn. Alex Friedman there, that little cutter slash slider, had a really nice conversation with Jesse Hahn about all of his major league experience. This guy you're seeing right here, see that fastball up and in? Jesse Hahn has 311 and a third major league innings with a 4.22 ERA. He is just exactly like Pomeranz. He's the right-handed version of Pomeranz. Hasn't pitched since 2021 due to injury, and he didn't have a great year in 2020. Well, matter of fact, he didn't really pitch in 2021. He only threw three innings. So 2020 was his last somewhat substantial time. He threw 17 and a third innings in the shortened season. 2020, he had an 0.52 ERA. So Jesse Hahn is a guy that, in my opinion, that you need to monitor because he is on deck, man. I mean, he is absolutely on deck for this system that loves to take these major league veteran-type guys, put them in the lab at AAA, and see which one of them can stick. Jesse Hahn and Drew Pomeranz, I think they are both guys that you need to pay attention to. The sinker, you've seen the right turn of Hahn, and then the curveball and the slider. There's the slider there. So those are two guys that are on deck at down on the farm that I think you need to pay attention to. So, Maddox Bruns, no, I have not heard any updates on him. I'm assuming he's still at the complex. River Ryan, the only thing I was told, The only thing anybody's been told is that they're just holding him off. What I was told was there is no, there was no like injury. It just was more, hey, we're holding them off. But again, hey, the image Sheehan, you know, the information I got was on his shoulder. You never know. One thing about this club is that they are overly cautious. And at this point, he's not on the 40-man roster. So, no, I don't have an update on either one of them. And Peyton Martin, okay, Peyton Martin's going to be soon. Matter of fact, I contacted Peyton about 2 days ago. And I was actually trying to get a hold of Gabe Emmett. Gabe Emmett doesn't have an Instagram. So I didn't know how to go to get a hold of Gabe Emmett. And I was asking Peyton, hey, do you know how to get a hold of Gabe? And he's like, oh, you know, he doesn't have an Instagram. So I say all that to say they actually added a splitter that has a change-up profile to Peyton Martin's mix. So Peyton Martin, his situation has been they've actually been teaching him a new pitch. So that's going to be exciting to Motley. Also, River Ryan, from what I was told, they're just holding him off. Okay, and then the Maddox Bruns deal, he's not listed on any of the rosters, I'm assuming. Typically speaking, and this is just strictly conjecture, this is strictly a guess, I have no inside information, but typically whenever you see that, they're on the developmental list, and when they're on the developmental list, what they're doing is, A, either it's slight injury, B, they're changing the pitch mix, you know, something of that nature, or it's command issues. So like a guy's not throwing enough strikes, and so they need to go back down and change a grip or change a mechanic, something to get him back in the zone, or they're changing his pitch mix or adding a pitch like they're doing with Peyton Martin, or there's a slight injury that's not, you know, not going to keep him out for the year. But whenever you get him in the complex, remember the complex doesn't play games till halfway through. It's more inner squad, extended spring training type stuff. You can keep a more heavy monitor on that situation. Usually that's what it is. That would be my guess with Maddox Bruns. But again, that would be strictly a guess. Hey, Mr. Classic, thank you for joining Team Ruiz. It doesn't matter who the Dodgers sign or bring up for the minors as long as they keep Dave. Yeah. Hey, Cole, Casey, thank you so much for joining. Colt, when Walker comes back and pitches well, do you see a contract offer like Glasnow's or to let him walk? I think they're going to offer him a contract. I know most people don't. But, man, when you have a – okay, so here's where I'm at with that. Hey, we're one away at 59. What a great crowd we've had. You guys are just simply the best. So I mentioned earlier with Chris Taylor, when you have success with this front office and you are in their trust tree – that's very important to them. So I think Walker Buehler is squarely in their trust tree. And so to get rid of a guy that they trust as much as they do Walker Buehler, that they grew up, man. I'm telling you, I was at Walker Buehler's first Triple-A start in Oklahoma City, and he didn't make an out. I can't remember exactly how much many runs he gave up, but I know after like the first 12 pitches or something, this isn't exactly correct, but after like the first 12 pitches, he had the bases loaded and hadn't thrown a strike. And his first outing was a disaster in AAA Oklahoma City. So his second outing in Oklahoma City, they actually turned the radar guns off, and he made it through like five innings. So I only say that, I give that anecdote to say, this organization invested a ton in Walker Buehler. Now you've had the injuries, he's in their trust tree. You're getting ready to have maybe a prime, maybe 3 or 4 years to where, and the Dodgers are in a position to where they have a chance to win multiple World Series. It just marries up perfectly to where I just can't imagine the Dodgers not doing everything they can to re-sign Walker Buehler. And I think the only thing that's going to keep him from being a Dodger is if somebody else offers him a contract that all of us go, well, yeah, man, that's stupid. I mean, he's however old he is, approaching 30, and they gave him a 27-year contract. I mean, you can't do that, right? It's going to take something like that that just absolutely makes no sense for the Dodgers not to make a very similar offer to. That's just my opinion. Hey, Hep C, thank you so much for joining. We have had a wonderful crowd tonight. It is 8:10. I'm going to hang out for a couple more minutes, answer any of your questions that you might have, and talk about any prospects that you might want to talk about, any of the good and bad. What changed with Lipsius since he joined the Dodgers? Small sample size, but any insight into any changes that he made? A matter of fact, let's throw some video up on Andre Lipsius. And first of all, the first thing that you mentioned, there is a change in scenery. But let's look at Andre Lipsius right here. Okay, see this right here? That is absolute money. Let me slow this down so we can get a good look. So some of the things that he is doing right now, okay, watch this swing. We're going to break this down. See how quiet that is? Look how simple that swing is right there, okay? See how simple that setup was? Let me back that up. Just put the foot up, brick the foot up, put it back down. The head hasn't moved, and look at this. He's right at 0-degree slot, which is absolutely perfect. So now all he has to do is turn that top hand. Look how deep he's letting to get the ball. So what Andre Lipsius is doing right now is this right here. He's hitting the ball the other way. To right, actually, I don't think I turned that over. No, I didn't. Okay, my bad. Let me back that up. I'm sorry, guys. Okay, so right here, see right there. Okay, pick the foot up, put it back down. Very simple. Head stays still. Look at both eyes on the ball. So these are very simple adjustments that an organization like the Dodgers are going to make. Now watch this right here. Boom. 0-degree slot. Now he's turning the top end. Now the next thing that you need to notice, look how deep he's letting this ball get. Okay, and because of that, look where the ball goes. He's hitting the ball to right center. That opposite field gap that Coach Holt talks about all the time. So the adjustment for Andre Lipsius, the reason why he is having so much success, I'm going to speed this back up, and you're going to see it for yourself, is what you're going to see it over and over and over with these hits. Watch as he attacks the baseball. His load, his setup, his attack pattern, his attack plan to the ball is very, very, very simple, okay? And watch where the ball goes. Here we go. Simple, right up the middle. He's making contact. He's thinking contact. He's thinking middle. And by doing that, he's letting the ball get deep. And when you let the ball get deep, you get to see more spin. You get to see actual location. And because of that, you're going to tend to make a little bit more contact. See, deep right there. But he turned on that ball, and he was able to hit that ball in the air. So, again, Andre Lipsius, there he's able to pull the ball there. But look, I want to show you, he actually pulled that ball. But then again, I want to show you how deep this pitch actually was whenever he pulled it. Right. Well, let me back that up just a touch, and I'll get to the speed setting and slow that down. And let's back that up, and I want to show you how deep this ball is right there. See how deep that is? I mean, although he pulled that ball, it's not because he's hitting that ball way out in front. He's still letting that ball get deep, so he's able to figure out exactly where to put his barrel. And because of that, he is having a massive, massive amount of success. And a matter of fact, Andre Lipsius so far in 2024 is hitting .333. He has 4 home runs. Hey, so thank you for that question about Andre Lipsius. I think that's a great question and a great guy to cover. Down on the farm, Elis Sheba, thank you so much for joining. When Hayward returns, what moves will happen with Páez or whomever? I would imagine Páez goes back down. Taylor Trammell is going to get DFA'd, no doubt about it. That's why they brought him up, because then they could DFA him. And if they do lose him in waivers, which they probably wouldn't, but if they do lose him in waivers, then you don't lose any of your depth that you've built, like a guy like a Drew Avens. Okay, so the first move, Elis Sheba, is that Taylor Trammell will get DFA'd. Hey, Hep C, looking at the realistic offensive trade options this year, it's O'Neill, Arias, Adames, Alonso, and that's it, right? If that's it, then that's a pretty nice, scarce pool of talent. Now, no doubt. If there was an obvious one out there, the Dodgers would have already made it. I don't think there's any doubt about that. Hey, Tamotley says, I think Walker's going to remake himself like Kershaw. I totally agree, Tamotley. We're on the same page. Going to cover him tomorrow in Oklahoma City. Going to go watch him live in Oklahoma City. Going to get there about 4:30. Hopefully talk to Nabil Chrismot, some other of the AAA Oklahoma City guys. Interview them. Get all the pregame routine of Walker Buehler on camera. And get his performance on camera from behind home plate. So super excited about that. Mr. Classic says, his velo, I heard, is unrecoverable. Yeah, Walker Buehler's around 93. I don't know what unrecoverable means, but as that thing stretches out, see, whenever you come back from Tommy John, it's not that you're more injury prone, it's just that everything feels different. So I don't think unrecoverable is is accurate. I wouldn't say that. Now, you might put odds on it, but I wouldn't say like 100% it's unrecoverable from that aspect. Hey, Craig, do you think the players who come up are overthinking things and get off to slow starts? It's small windows, no doubt about it. I mean, when you're coming into a team that has Shohei Ohtani, Mookie Betts, Freddie Freeman, and it's World Series, and you feel like that you only have two or three games to perform, or you're going to go back down, yes, definitely there's a tendency to press. I think that is – I think that's a definite factor to it. But, hey, like Jack Murphy said, man, Major Leagues is all about getting opportunity, and then once you get your opportunity, seizing it. So, yeah, I do think they press because they know the windows are small. But that's just it. I mean, hey, that's the blessing and the curse of being a Dodgers prospect. Totally agree. Hep C, Nack did great today. Covered that earlier in the show, how he was nervous in the first thing and didn't get that first fastball over, so had to center cut that second fastball for the home run. And then how by the second inning you saw the real Landon Nack in terms of how he incorporated all four pitches. So, hey, we have had a wonderful crowd tonight. I want to thank everybody so much for tuning in. It has been a lot of fun. Again, tune in tomorrow for all of my social medias. I will have a lot of coverage on Walker Buehler. Big thanks again to Braden Fisher for providing my beautiful wife and I two tickets to the Tulsa Drillers game Friday night in Wichita, Oklahoma. We are so excited about that. So until next time, I want to thank everybody for tuning in and say, go Dodgers!